This is File 48, Cycle 2. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Mr. William Willis, who is Chairman of the Board of Finance. He's going to talk this morning about his association with Founders Insurance Company. Then he's going to talk about the budget and how it's prepared. And then he's going to talk a little bit about the Civic Life project that his son is involved in. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
William F. Willis.
And what is your birth date?
It's August 3rd, 1948.
And where were you born?
Albany, New York.
And your parents' names?
John and Mary.
I can spell those. Your siblings?
Donna, Kathy, John, and Judy.
Is Kathy with a K or a C?
That's with a C.
Good. And your educational background after high school?
I graduated with a Bachelor of Science from Central Connecticut State College at that time. And a minor in political science. Well, double major.
And how did you come to the area?
I worked for a U.S. congressman that represented this portion of Connecticut and got very familiar with the area, and working with the congressman, I met Roberta, my wife at that time, and we got married shortly after that. I don't want to say shortly after that, but quite a while.
Yeah, well, whatever works. How did you come to what used to be Wagner McNeil Insurance Company?
After I left the staff of the congressman, I pursued two political offices and unfortunately lost, but that was, you take a chance, mm-hmm. and if it happens, it happens.
Yep.
If it doesn't, you move on. So a friend of mine that I had worked with in political organizing, he recommended that I take a look at Metropolitan Insurance Company, because he was an agent there, and I went to work for Metropolitan in 1981, and worked there for 3 years, and during that period of time, I got a letter from Walt Shannon asking if I ever wanted to switch, to give him a call, and he'd love to talk about it. So I was commuting to Waterbury from Salisbury.
Ooh.
And he was working down there, and I felt, well, why don't I sit down with Walt and see what the opportunities are, and the rest is history. I started working with Wagner McNeil in 1984, and the rest is history. Here we are.
When did Walt Shannon leave, finally?
Well, let's see. I bought the agency in 1999, and then Walt stayed on for a couple of years. And then just, as things changed, just felt he didn't have to stay involved anymore.
And he developed Alzheimer's as well.
Right. And so that was, a major factor. He had such a wealth of insurance knowledge, and it was just so disheartening to see that that institutional history was being lost.
I did an interview. I wanted to do it with him, but couldn't. Did it with Celeste. And a lot of that history has been saved, because we went through as much back history as she knew.
Right.
And every once in a while, she'd throw a question to Walt, and he'd have the answer, which was really great.
Right. No, that is.
What kind of insurance do you sell? The agency?
Well, the agency itself, we're quite a broad spectrum of insurance, from personal insurance, which is home, auto, to commercial insurance, from a business owner policy to major insurance, commercial package insurance policies, as well as group life and health. So we do have, any type of insurance that people need, we find it. Mm-hmm. We can do it here. We can do it all here. And we are not only a local agency, we are statewide, national, and international. So we do, we're licensed in all 50 states.
Oh, all right.
So we can write, obviously, anywhere in the country, as well as overseas if necessary, depending on the situation.
Oh, my. Wonderful. How has the agency changed since you bought it?
Oh, well, a great deal has changed in terms of the use of the Internet, and which is just a common occurrence for any business mm-hmm. and any individual. It's just there is so much information available online, and people want to communicate as quickly as possible, and that's usually the quickest way to communicate, through email and mm-hmm. with your clients, with potential clients, and back and forth. And, if it appears to be a very convenient way of doing business. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we do, since we're here in a small town, we do have many of our clients come here and meet with us and discuss their insurance program and work out whatever details we have to work out. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have a lot of people from Manhattan.
Oh, yes.
Sure, not only their place here, but their place in Manhattan, mm-hmm. and maybe another place in Florida or Colorado or something of that nature. So they like working with a smaller agency and having that personal contact.
Oh,
not
yes.
Not that the Internet or email or mm-hmm. does not allow for that.
It's no, just, and the personal contact builds trust.
Correct.
Which you don't have necessarily with the Internet.
Oh, no, not at all. It depends on, how you're conveying it and using mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And we try to work very closely with our clients and trying to solve their issues.
Have you merged with any other agencies?
We bought 7 agencies, if I remember the number correctly, and then as a lot of us were aging, obviously, out at some point.
We just get more mature.
Right.
We don't age.
And, in the changing industry, the industry really someone to come in and say, I want to start an insurance agency right now, that's very, very difficult or even impossible because of the requirements that the insurance companies put on you in reference to volume. So that's why we felt we had to keep expanding. And then once we expanded to 7, it's just absorbing that type of expansion and really getting it worked out over a number of years, which we did. And then, we came to the point where we're thinking, well, what are we going to do? I mean, number one, you couldn't have someone from within the agency even attempt to purchase it, because as you expand, it just becomes more and more difficult, and you can't saddle someone with that kind of burden, or you wouldn't want to.
You wouldn't want to.
And so you have to look for a bigger entity that is interested in, say, moving into, Connecticut, or looking at our agency and how it fits into their culture, into their system, and how they do business. And we did. We looked very hard for a year and found an agency to work with. It's Assured Partners. And we are very satisfied with that relationship because, we manage our agency right here. There's no, it's access to resources that you need
yeah.
if you want to keep your entity here, because, it's just too, right now, the way the insurance companies operate, you just have to have volume and you have to have leverage. And if you're a small mom and pop shop, you just don't have it. They're not going to be around for long.
Yeah.
I mean, even I can name 3 or 4 agencies here that, we're very close to, in terms of competitors mm-hmm. that we've known for years, and they have done the same thing. They've had to in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big difference. rates when I first started with Wagner McNeil.
It's changed. Well, everything's changed. Are you still in this one location, or do you have other locations that you function from?
We do. We have an office in Torrington. We used to have an office in Orange and in West Haven and in Cheshire, but it just, as the internet takes hold of everything, yeah, it becomes much more efficient to manage it out of two offices.
And what's the number of staff that you have here?
I think it's seven. Let's see, one, two.
Trick question.
Six. And then we do have one of our agency managers is here half the week, so it's really seven. Now we have here.
Okay. I was going to ask you the area that you cover, but because of the internet, that's a non-starter. You cover everything. You really do.
Right, and we, you know, obviously we're primarily, our client base is really from this tri-state area.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we, because of the nature of our clientele, we're very well established in Manhattan.
Future plans to expand? Or are you happy where you are?
No, we can't expand beyond where we are now. We're quite large. And it's just being able to manage it.
Yeah,
and that's
if it gets
important.
Too bad, big, you can't manage it.
No.
Anything else you'd like to add to this section before we go on?
Do I want to add anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can say that our staff is very, very top-notch. They're
yes.
all licensed, and they all do every 2 years. They have to, well, over a two-year period, they have to continue their,
mm-hmm.
their ongoing education. And if they wish to pursue higher education in terms of in the insurance field, they have help
mm-hmm.
here. So we really want to improve our staff, and they're very good.
Oh, yes.
And they know their...
They know their onions.
Their stuff inside and out,
mm-hmm.
and that what makes an agency function smoothly.
Oh, sure. And the fact that you've been an established firm for a long time, people know you, they trust you, it's a win-win situation. It really is. Now, with a political background, how did you get involved with the Board of Finance? What was your impetus with that one?
Well, once I settled here permanently in Salisbury, and since I had worked up here through the local congressman from this area, and worked it through mm-hmm. this whole area with selectmen, first selectmen in each town, and the state reps in this area and state senator, that I just knew the area quite
sure.
well, and people knew me. And
mm-hmm.
so,
mm-hmm.
And then I had young kids going through the grammar school system, so they asked me if I would be willing to serve on the Board of Ed, and ran for office and was elected, and served on the Board of Education for 12 years. And then...
Do you remember the years?
Do I remember the years?
I mean, you know, roughly, was this in the 80s?
It had to be like 1980, you know, maybe 85 to 12 years after that.
Okay.
Somewhere in that range. Patty Williams would have the exact dates. But I probably should check it out.
That's okay.
And so, after 12 years, you know, you want to... Especially in the Board of Ed, you want to move on because you want to give other people an opportunity
mm-hmm.
to step in, especially on the Board of Ed, since it's quite involved. Not that any board is not involved. We're all involved. But that's what then got me, because then once I did not seek re-election to the Board of Ed, then the town committee came and asked if I'd be willing to run for Board of Finance. And so I said, sure, I'll run. I'm not going to win anyway, because at that time it was very difficult.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I
guess
won
what?
By 4 votes, I think. It was somewhere in that range.
And that would have been?
Well, 12, say from 85, 12, 80, 2005, 6, 7, 8, probably somewhere in the range of 1998.
Yeah, that's about right.
And then been on the board ever since. And, I was vice chairman to Carl Williams. And once Carl stepped down, I became chairman. And it's been an excellent board to work on and to work with the people that are on that board.
Who are some of the people that are on the board?
There's Don Malin, Matt Kiefer.
Oh, you got people that are good.
And then some younger members, Chris Williams, Michael Clulo.
Okay.
And Carol Demetricia.
I'm not going to try and spell that one.
Just go DMY. Carol.
How many are actually on the board?
There's 6 of us.
And do you have a term of office? Or?
Yes, they're 6-year terms.
All right. In order to develop the budget, can you tell me the process? When do you start, and what are the various steps that you take to do the budget?
Well, we start the process, at least the notification, that the budget process is beginning, with the Board of Selectmen and Board of Education. And at that time, all our meetings are scheduled for, and the key element is the initial budgets from the Board of Finance and Board of Selectmen, and that usually takes place in March, if I can get my notes.
Sure.
In any event, we take the initial budgets in March, and so we review those budget proposals with the Board of Ed and the Board of Selectmen. And we do not tell them where, if we believe a budget is just, it's a little top-heavy, we tell them right there, and that, you have to try to look at areas where you can reduce it without, jeopardizing, many of the programs that you're trying to pursue. But at times we have to look at, the income that's coming in.
Where do you get your income from?
We get it, primarily from from taxes, but we do also receive grants, fees, building permit fees, et cetera, and that usually comes up to about a little between 1.5 and 1.6 million, and then the remainder from taxes, which is about 13 to 14 million. But we try to look at that budget and determine, what budget is going to work, and where we can at least, we can afford a lot. It's just putting the tax burden that we don't want to have it overwhelming, and we try to.
Gradually, try to make it equal for everybody.
Right. Try to just build up a tax mill rate. that can really meet the needs of the town without being overly burdensome.
Do you have...
Come April, we get the final Board of Ed and Board of Selectmen budget after we have recommended cuts. We don't go into specific line items that say you must cut here. We will give an approximate number, for them to work with. But we try to, we can't do that on the Board of Ed budget anyway. We have no authority. We can just say, look, you got to cut $60,000.
Yeah.
With the Board of Selectmen, we can designate specific line items, but we try not to do that either. We want them to manage their programs without butting in and saying you got to cut here when they could maybe reduce some money elsewhere and save that program. So we avoid that, even though we have the authority to say, tell them to cut in a specific line item.
Do you have public informational meetings?
Yes, those are all our meetings are open to the public, and we do have a public hearing that occurs in April, where the budgets, the final budgets that the Board of Ed and Board of Finance the Board of Selectmen present to the Board of Finance, are then voted on to send to a public hearing. We don't vote to say we approve this budget. We're saying we're going to present this at public hearing, get public input on both budgets. And then after that public hearing, we do meet the Board of Finance and discuss the public hearing and what the comments were from the public and what support there was or opposition or at the... a public hearing to the budgets to make that final determination of what we're going to present to the town meeting.
And the town meeting is generally in
May? Town meeting is in May. Okay. And then that's where we have our final presentation of the budgets. And then the town meeting vote.
Is the budget vote at the town meeting written or oral, or show of hands?
No, that's a paper ballot.
It's a paper ballot.
Because...
then you've got verification.
Right. Plus, it's any item that is over $20,000 must go to town meeting, any allocation. And there is a threshold where you must have a secret ballot. Paper ballot on what that expenditure would be.
Does the controller have any input in this, the town controller?
Right, we meet with the town comptroller throughout this process. The comptroller is collecting quite a bit of data, financial data, and then we get quite a bit, at least from the prior year, from our audited financial statements. That's an audit, an independent audit that is done. So that gives us a great deal of background information. But our comptroller does quite a yeoman's job in terms of collecting all this data and getting it ready for us so we can review it and determine an equitable mill rate.
That was my next question. What is a mill rate? How do you set it?
Well, the mill rate comes off the assessed value of the properties in town. If, as an example, we're right now, we have a 10.7 mill rate. That means for every $1,000 of assessed value, the tax is $10.70. Medium assessment is approximately $350,000. If you're below that, you're paying less. Mm-hmm. If you're above it, you're paying more. But that's how we set it, you know, and that's a long...
It's a long process.
Right.
And it's the Board of Finance that sets the mill rate?
Correct.
And then the tax bills come out the end of June, right?
They will go out, you know, in the beginning of June, right.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'll be due, you know, they want them to, July 1 is the beginning of the fiscal year.
When does a referendum happen?
The referendum will happen. Anybody can force a referendum with presenting the appropriate number of signatures to the Board of Selectmen.
How many signatures do you have to have?
Well, I believe it's 200. We can confirm that with Patty, but it's somewhere in that range. I'm pretty sure it's 200. And once that's presented, that's verified and presented to the Board of Selectmen, then they're required to call a referendum on the budget. Now, I can't recall exactly when that petition has to be in. We just haven't had it in years.
Mm.
I remember probably over 10 years ago there may have been one.
Okay.
Where the Region 1 board, that's automatic referendum.
Mm-hmm. Have I left anything out?
No, there's a lot to do to go through when you get into a Board of Finance stuff.
But I don't want to make it too heavy.
Right. You don't want to. That's the basics. And then we're responsible for doing an independent audit every year on all the finances of the town and the Board of Ed, because you want to make sure everything is on the up and up.
Okay. It's a complicated process.
Correct. And so we hire an independent mm-hmm. auditor who works with the comptroller and the Board of Ed secretary to collect all the data and for her to review it thoroughly, and then come back with the audited financial statements, which we present to the town for approval in February.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this section before we go on?
That, right now, no.
Good. That's fine. That's fine. Civic Life Project, what is it?
The Civic Life Project, Dominic Lesourin and his wife, Catherine.
What's his last name?
His name is Dominic Lesourin. Dominique. I can get you his name. And Catherine. Dominique Lesour, Lasseur, and Catherine Tatge, Tatge.
Thank you.
They were the ones who came up with the concept
mm-hmm.
and started it. They're documentary filmmakers that are quite well known in the documentary film.
When did they start this project here?
When did they start it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, at the regional high school.
Right. It has to be more than 10 years ago.
Okay.
If you go on, you want me to go online right now?
No, I want to finish this up.
And it's a way of getting students involved in civics, especially in their local community or in the local area, where they would take on a issue and get out and do the basic research on the issue, come up with questions to conduct interviews with the key people that are involved in those issues, and it could involve a mayor or a selectman, it could involve a nonprofit group, or it could involve the school, or on the state level, a state representative or lieutenant governor. So it really is quite involved, and they do quite a job, and my son had volunteered to help them out since he had been doing film work out in New Mexico, and then came back east here and decided, I have this background, let me volunteer and see what's, because he was going to Quinnipiac on a film program down there. And he got involved, and then they felt Penn was quite qualified, and they hired him.
Great.
For the job. So he was the key person that went out, met with the students, developed the issues with them, you know, and pointed them in the right direction and helped them with the research and the questions to develop, and then helping them set up the interviews with key people that are involved in the issue in their local community or statewide. And then they learn how to do an interview and film it, and then follow up with editing. So it's the students that participate in it. I mean, I've met with several of them, and they're quite enthusiastic about it. It really gets them involved, and they've indicated they've learned more than they ever done.
Well, you learn by doing.
Right.
You learn by doing.
And so my son really, really enjoys it. And
good.
And he does help out right now, but he is a full-time teacher at one of the private schools in Kent, Marblewood, where they've been at work there on the Civic Life Project with them, and felt that they needed someone like that at the school. So, but he does still work with the Civic Life Project.
About how many students participate each year with this project?
Well, I know they have 14 high schools, so, I mean, they may have 8 to 10 students, I believe, within. I don't know how extensive it is now, since Ben had to, you know, he did pursue a full-time career. He helps out with the civic life here and there, especially at the getting close to the end of the program in terms of production.
When they've produced this documentary, where is it showcased? Is it shown at the high school? Is it shown at a town meeting? Where do they get their feedback from the public?
They do an initial program. I think it's Housatonic and maybe a couple other local schools in the area. They show it at Noble Horizons, you know, with invited guests from around the area who sit and meet with them on an individual basis. Key groups that have been working on this, and then they do show their final documentaries at the State Capitol in Hartford, and also at the Millerton Movie House, where the general public really has an opportunity to go and see the work done. The various schools. It's not just one school. It could be 7 that are showing here. And the students are there to be, you know, to answer questions on the documentary and how they developed it and how they got to the point where the issues that they were concerned about.
Well done. Well done. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this interview in general?
In general? No, I think I've
done.
You think you've gotten everything in there that you want to?
Oh, I'm sure I'll come up with many other things after.
Thank you so very much.
All right.